be as hot topic as our current temperature here in this room. So first of all, this talk is based on mostly this last paper in this frame, which appeared in September. And I will be extensively using our formalism and notation and basically description of the system, which we are formulating in these two systems, in these two papers. And this work was done, the one in frame, in collaboration with Damian Easton from Arizona and Ignacy Savitsky from Heidelberg, whereas these two first two works were done in collaboration with Cedric Defaya, Joel Pujolas, and Ignacy Savitsky. So first of all, like plan, okay? What I'm going to tell you in the next 15 minutes, or so, like first I will tell you motivation for considering these funny bounces. Secondly, I will tell you about the model, namely not the one model, you know, I'm not interested in one particular system, but in the whole class of such systems. And then I will really show you exactly how to bounce, and then I will list open problems related to this. Okay. So what is motivation? Well, like big picture, okay? Kind of philosophy. Of course, we are all interested in being cosmologists, you know, in the origin of the universe. But in particular, it's quite interesting to ask the following question. So was there a beginning of time? Okay? What is beginning of time? That's really good for a public talk, you know, beginning of time, people would love you for that. But let's be more precise, okay? Beginning of time, at least for me, is a moment when you stop caring about strong quantum gravity. Okay? When you are close to normal life, when the universe can be described by perfectly normal fields and really weakly coupled quantum gravity, some perturbative stuff, you don't care about really this strong, curved, God knows what, gravity. And as far as we know, by current paradigm, you go backwards in time, you hit the singularity, and always quantum gravity is very strong there. And you don't know how to describe it. Therefore, it's quite ideologically important to understand, is it really necessary to have this epoch when you necessarily hit the strong quantum gravity regime? So was there this epoch at all in our past or not? Secondly, if there was a beginning, was the universe collapsing or expanding immediately afterwards? That's also a reasonable question to ask. Of course, standard paradigm would tell you, oh, it was expanding. But actually, there is no reason for that. So if the universe experienced an early period of inflation, which all observations, okay, all what we see now, is currently perfectly confirming inflation. Most simplest, stupid, whatever model you want, it's all there. Unfortunately for us, fortunately for the guys who are studying them. So what happened before inflation, however, is a very reasonable question. Okay? Maybe it's not very practical from a phenomenological perspective. Maybe we will never learn what was before inflation. However, being a cosmologist, it's important to pose this question and it's important to think. Was there some epoch before inflation and what could be there? And indeed, as we know, inflation is not, in fact, past complete, okay? If you just take this inflationary dynamics and to try to go backwards in time, again, you hit the birth of the universe, you hit the strong quantum gravity regime, or classically speaking, you necessarily hit a singularity. And that's the result which was proven by Bohr, de Guz, and Twilenkin in 2001.
So isn't that the whole thing kind of a past 22 thing with this theorem? Because the idea of inflation is that you generate fluctuations from quantum fluctuations, but then you use classical theory to trace back or turn back clock to the beginning of inflation. So you cannot really rely on the classical theory when the whole inflation is supposed to be quantum mechanical.
Well, there you assume that the fluctuations are small. That's
right. But this is so the reason the way this theorem works is that whatever classical or small fluctuation you take, if you take it back in time, then it's going to grow up and blow up and it's going to
But not the quantum fluctuations. Not the quantum fluctuations.
Right, it's just so more precisely, you could say inflation is not past complete within general relativity. If you want to imagine something else happened, well,
yeah, but I mean, the whole premise of inflation is not, is you want to generate quantum mechanical.
No, look, of course. Of course. You're absolutely right. If you really try to go like to real quantum gravity, you have no idea. But you have no idea when what does it mean to be complete, actually. Because you don't know whether the singularity should be there or should be not there, how to describe it or not. This is just a quasi-classical regime, if you want. Quasi-classically,
it's
you...
just classical, isn't it?
I think they would assume like small jumps, like really, really small jumps there. But as far as your background is only expanding, you necessarily hit the border. You necessarily hit this regime when you are singular. Okay. So let's go then from this really, really big picture, okay, and really, really like philosophical thing to very modest mathematical exercise, very simple one. Namely, can one construct a stable, by stability I mean kind of UV, or if you want classical UV stability. So namely, I want to have real sound speed and no ghosts in my model. Whereas, of course, currently people like Garriga and Vilenkin would say that ghosts may be okay. But let's be very conservative regarding that and say we don't want to have ghosts. Just to remind you, what are ghosts? Ghosts are series with negative kinetic terms. So basically, they like Hamiltonians are not bounded from below in a very badly fashion. Then I want to have a classical model. Or if you want quasi-classical, I could quantize perturbations. And I want to consider a universe which is specially flat and normal isotropic and so on. I don't want to go to Kasner epochs and things like that. And I want my specially flat Friedman universe to bounce, to go from collapse to expansion. And the question, is it possible to have any model which would do the job or not? Okay, the main obstacle, immediately. If you take a specially flat Friedman universe, in order to bounce, you need to violate null energy condition. Why? Obviously, because at the bounce, H is equal to zero. After the bounce, H positive. Before the bounce, H negative. That means H dot should be positive, because H is growing. But as we know, null energy condition exactly says you that it's impossible to have H dot positive. So immediate obstacle is that you have to violate null energy condition, and as I want, you need to do it in a stable fashion. By stability, I mean exactly what I said. Yeah? At least requiring Z. So I require linear stability. But as we know, normal perfect fluids, normal fields, they never violate null energy condition. Okay, they cannot do it. Especially, you see, this violation of null energy condition is really large if you want to have a bounce. So it's not just small perturbative effect which you could attribute to some maybe quantum whatever something. No, it's a big thing. Okay. So what would be the resolution? Well, if you really want to have that, then go to imperfect fluids. If perfect cannot do the job, go to imperfect fluids. Okay. Or if you want, go to even less canonical fields. What does it mean? That means for us, go G. Okay. What does it mean, go G? G stands for Galileans. And as you have seen, the archive is now, you know, really flourishing by these Galileans. And Galileans were introduced by Alberto Nicolis, Riccardo Rattazzi, and Trinquirini in 2008. But if you really look at this literature and archive, you will realize that all these Galileans are, in fact, just scalar tensor series with high derivatives in the action. Okay? But with equations of motion, which are all second order, including Einstein equations. So basically, this Galilean symmetry, people have already forgotten on the second stage when they were looking at papers. Then the interesting thing is that, in fact, the most general theory, which would have high derivatives in the action, but would have all equations of motion of second order, was derived here in Waterloo, just a couple of years before I was born, by Walter Hardesky. And at that time, it was just pure mathematical exercise. As you can see, was published in this paper. And you know, it was completely unknown paper for like really, really long period of time. So that Cedric de Fayet, Gauss, Stier, and Zachariade, just I think a year ago, had to rederive it. And it was a really painful process to derive like really complicated mathematical thing. They did it, and well, after that, it turned out that it was done just before. Okay? Yeah.
So your definition is now not the Galilean symmetry, it's the second order
decomposition. Exactly, exactly. Absolutely right. So what does this most, what is this most general theory which you can imagine? Okay. Here it's very restrictive, in fact, because you want to have really second order equations of motion, both for gravity, namely second order Einstein equations, and second order equations for the scalar field. And it turned out in, from this paper that you can write it really in this form. This is, of course, really strongly massaged equation, or if you want, massaged Lagrangian. And it was brought to this form, which was already quite a non-trivial task, by Tsutomu Kobayashi, Yamaguchi, and Yakayama in May 2011. So as you can see, those of you who are familiar with Galileans, how to get Galileans out of that? Well, take this function g to be just normal connected to term x. Take this function g2 to be absent, because it's absent for Galileans. Take this function to be x. Then take this term away, okay? And for this, you also use x. Obviously, normal Galilean theory would not be compatible with this requirement because you need to kill somehow these two, all two important terms, okay? Because exactly these terms, they correct all commutators coming from these covariant derivatives, okay? From this horrible structure. So in fact, it's quite a nice thing that nature gives us a Lagrangian which has four free functions.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. So your statement is this is the most generic scalar tensor yielding second order equations, presuming you don't go beyond second order in derivatives on the metric, or
in both fields, in phi and the metric.
Okay, because we have these Lovelock theories, which
yes,
you haven't written down those terms here.
Yes, but you see, that would imply even higher. Higher order. So I mean, Lovelock would be five. Lovelock would be five dimensional, first of all.
But,
oh yeah, yeah, yeah. No, no, no. Of course, of course. If you couple to scalar, that would be a different story. Yes, 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 yes.
So that would be.
Yes, yes, yes. You. Well, first of all, many of these terms are hiddenly covered here. And in fact, you can get it from Lovelock by compactifying it and so on. But actually, everything is just inside, but it's not easy to to drill.
Do you know whether Lovelock coupled to a scalar can be written in this form? Or?
Yeah. Okay. Good. Let's go further. So why is this horrible system interesting at all? Okay. Besides of just curious mathematical fact. Okay. In fact, so for this talk and for me, the most important thing will be that one can stably violate the most basic of these energy conditions, exactly what we needed for the bounds. So namely, one can violate this null energy condition. Just again, to remind you, what is this null energy condition is just you take your energy momentum tensor, you take all possible null vectors, you produce this scalar, term mu and mu and nu, and it's larger or equal to zero. That implies that you satisfy null energy condition. So in cosmology, it is just h dot, which should be always non-positive, so h should never grow. And for perfect fluid, it's just the statement that p plus epsilon should be larger than zero. That's the most basic of all energy conditions in general relativity, the weakest one, if you want. Many theorems in GR, including like the growth of the horizon of a black hole, would rely on that statement. So now, if you can violate this most basic thing in a really stable fashion, stable, I mean, at least linearly stable, in that case, you kind of open a Pandora box, okay? And usually, Pandora box is related to all these diseases, wars, crimes, and so on, and other highly unpleasant things. But in fact, here inside, you can have like maybe models which may turn out to be non-physical at the end. We never know. But at least they're not pathological from the very beginning because they are stable, linearly stable, okay? And so what can you achieve? You can have healthy and testable phantom dark energy. That's important for the guys who are doing phenomenological dark energy studies because you need to know whether this W less than minus one is excluded or not. And if it is excluded, then if it is included, then should you take like solar system test and so on. On the other hand, you can have bouncing cosmology. And in fact, first people who mentioned the possibility to realize a bounce for such theories were Alberto Criminelli, Paolo Criminelli, Alberto Nicolis, and Trinquilini in 2010. However, they have not studied it at all. There's just one sentence that is possible. It seems to be possible. Then it was Tao Tao, Kwiu, Jara Yeslin, and Xinmin Zhang, and these two other guys, I don't know their names, who have written quite a severe analysis of the model of Alberto, Paolo, and Trinquilini, and studied that really bounces are possible there. And we were talking to them extensively, and we published just slightly later in 2011, studying a different class of models, actually much wider class, you know, infinite class of models. So then one can also have superinflation with blue spectral gravity waves, which is quite interesting also from a phenomenological perspective. And this would not be possible if you don't break Nolan-G condition. Okay, on the other hand, on more like less phenomenological, more maybe kind of speculative perspective or more formal perspective, this stuff can describe some very weird imperfect superfluid or imperfect perfect fluid, if you want. There is no dissipation, however, your energy momentum tensor is not of the perfect fluid form. Okay, so you have some transport. And that's what I will show you, what gets transported there. And actually, I gave a seminar a year ago here, and you have seen some of the transparencies on that. So, but you see, if you have some stuff, some cosmological stuff, which is not a perfect fluid, which is imperfect, in that case, you also change cosmological perturbation theory, you introduce new effects, and that's quite interesting for actually testing dark energy versus lambda. Okay, most probably it is lambda, but we have no clue. And you need to have motivation to study more and more and more details of structure formation and so on to see whether it's really lambda or not. You have to be motivated for that. And the only way for this is to see for new effects which could be there. And then another extremely speculative point is that similar to gravity, these series, as we have seen, they are non-polynomial generically, highly non-linear. Moreover, they, in some cases, even admit superluminal propagation on some Lorentz symmetry breaking backgrounds. And that would imply that really, if there is any UV completion, then it should be given by some either something very exotic, like to be non-local theory, non-Lorentz symmetric theory at the beginning, or to be maybe less exotic for some taste, to be kind of classicalized, okay? And this classicalization, that's a more trendy word for having UV completion, and that was suggested for gravity and for series of this type by Guillard-Wall and company in 2010. So also, you see, well, you could care about UV completion and what would be the way here. But on the other hand, you could think about, you know, it's just a phase for some fluid description. It's effective, and you don't really care about the details. OK, so what is this theory which I'm going to talk about and which I talked about here a year ago? Well, let's take first two parts of this horrible, long Hardansky action. And these are just these two pieces. They're single tower because they don't have curvature terms there. Okay? If you remember previous transparencies, if you go further in derivatives, you, yeah.
So are you saying that the Galilean was not the second derivative theory? Because
of course not.
Didn't have the curvature
term. Of course not. That was exactly the point of our paper with Cedric Defayet and okay. Esposito Ferreze. The point is, if you consider it on a flat, like really fixed geometrical background, you don't worry with respect to the metric, then it is second order. But immediately you start to worry with respect to the metric, you get higher derivatives of both the scale of the scalar field and the metric. So with this theory does not, you see, we have two free functions. We do not assume any Galilean symmetry. And this funny word braiding is for kinetic mixing. Because here we have derivative of phi, here we have derivative of the metric, and they talk to each other, they're mixed. OK, this is just equation of motion that you have seen a year ago. That's a mess, but as you see, it's second order. So only second derivatives are here, here, and here inside of our menu. The another important point is that You see, this is horrible, really. Like, it's not even properly classified in mathematics, in fact. What are these equations? But the point is, despite of this quadratic nature of this equation into second derivatives, it's always linear in any second derivative with the same index. In particular, it is linear in phi 2 dot. Doesn't matter. I pick any frame. In phi 2 dot, it's linear. That means that I can solve with respect to phi 2 dot and use Cauchy-Kowalewski theorem. Okay, so I can talk about time evolution for these systems. Otherwise, it would be singular from the very beginning, and I would not know what is time evolution there at all. Okay, so now you have seen this horrible equation. Let's be kind of try to make it simpler. And also, you have seen this highly nonlinear theory. So what are the theories which we know which can be really highly nonlinear and horrible? They, in fact, have hydrodynamical systems. And so here I will show you that this phi should not be fundamental. It can be just hydrodynamics. And these two free functions, the physical meaning is that the function k really is responsible for the equation of state, whereas function g is responsible for transport. OK, just let me accelerate a bit. So equation of motion, in fact, can be written as this conservation law. Or if you have broken shift symmetry in phi, in that case, it's non-conservation law. Okay, so you have a source. But in any case, you have here some current. Okay, this is J mu. And just don't look here. That's how this current looks like. And this is how this letter P looks like. And in fact, this P is just a Lagrangian where you added like total derivative. Okay, so it's another Lagrangian from which you can get the same equation of motion. Okay, then if you want to have hydrodynamics, then again, I'm just repeating the same stuff which I told here a year ago, because exactly, I know. But the point is that it's useful because we will see that it's imperfect fluid. Okay, that's what I want to explain. So we have this current. In simplest case, it's neuter current, which corresponds to shift charges. Okay, shifts in field space. On the other hand, we have another way of having, like, we have another vector there in the system. And if you want to consider hydrodynamics, then something should flow. If something flows, then it's better to be time-like. Okay? So because it's only single degree of freedom, so we have only phi, so phi should have time-like gradient. Otherwise, it's not flowing. It's kind of more, more rigid thing. Okay? So, but if it is time-like, then you can normalize it. Then you have really preferred frames there at each point. So that means that you have this fiducial for velocity. And as you can see here, phi works as an internal clock. Now what you could recall, so I recall this action. Let me show you. Like, okay, as you can see, if phi is not here, then the system is not symmetric with respect to phi goes to minus phi. Okay, why it is interesting? Because okay, let's skip it. I wish I knew how to list it without this. Why it is interesting? Because now this phi is an internal intrinsic clock. And what you can see that this shift symmetry, where exactly this hydrodynamical description would be the best, in fact, really violates this phi to minus phi. Well, that means you have kind of error of time built in this system inside, secretly, OK? Of course, the whole Lagrangian with respect to normal time is symmetric.
So you're not going to allow phi dot to go to 0 anywhere, including at the bounds.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So then, what we have? We have. Let's write this hydrodynamics, okay? Because it will simplify all our.
But this doesn't follow from your equation, does it?
What doesn't follow?
The fact that this should be grad phi should be time-like.
No, no, it's not. It's just a restriction.
Okay.
But for cosmology, we know that will be the case, especially if fluctuations are small. Then. If phi was phi of t, was homogeneous anisotropic scalar field, then small fluctuations will just, you know, move you slightly away from there. So it's a perfect situation for cosmology, in fact.
Why
do
you say the shift symmetry violates the sign change symmetry?
Okay, because you see here, shift symmetry implies there is no phi in k, no phi in g. Then if I change phi to minus phi, this only depends on x. X is just my normal kinetic term, which is quadratic in phi. But this term changes, switches the sign. You see? So actually, the only way to understand it, at least how I can understand it, that your whole phase space of your solutions, of or initial data, if you want, is separated, is split it in two subclasses. And the only way to go from one subclass to another is to make the scalar field to be space-like or null, which would be away from this approximation when the hydrodynamical description works. No, no, of course, if G is zero, yeah. If G is zero, then we don't care, yeah, yeah. Yes, yes. If G is zero, then we are back to normal perfect fluid, and then we don't care. Oops. There's probably some delay there, okay. So then let me just introduce notation, okay? Notation is we introduce projector, which projects everything orthogonally to the velocity. We introduce also time derivative, which is just derivative along this preferred reference frame. And we also introduce expansion, which is just special derivative of u, if you want, total derivative of u, or the derivative of logarithm of the co-moving volume, okay? Small infinitesimal volume moving with this four velocity. Then, okay, we have this gradient of phi, we have this velocity there, we have preferred reference frame there. On the other hand, we have also current, okay? Well, if we have current, we have charges flowing there, let's write charge density. So charge density is just the projection of the current onto this speed u. And as you see now, there is a part which is n0, which only depends on first derivatives of the field. Or if you want, it does not depend on gradients of velocity. Whereas this part contains theta, and theta obviously is first order in derivatives in u. So obviously this hydrodynamics which contains these terms cannot be perfect fluid hydrodynamics, because perfect fluids, they don't care about gradients of the velocities. So then you see the coefficient of proportionality which really controls this deviation from perfect fluid form is just this expression. So x is just derivative, okay, in this formula. So then you can calculate standard energy momentum tensor and calculate energy density, okay, in this co-moving frame. And in that case, what you get again normal energy momentum part, energy part, which doesn't depend on second derivatives of the scalar field, plus this part, which does depend on it. And then further, okay, you have energy density, you have charge density. Then you can calculate what is energy per charge. It's just this derivative. And it turns out to be phi dot, where dot is derivative along u. And in fact, this coincides with what people would use for normal perfect fluids. If you look at like Bernard Schultz's paper from 1970, he would derive the same result, but for only perfect fluid. OK, now you have the current. And well, we have just seen what is this projection, what is the part of the current, so to say, moving together with u. So it's our charge density. But then you can see that there is additional part, which is purely special, and which is a purely special gradient of the chemical potential. Okay? Now we open the book. The book is Landau-Lifschitz volume 6. And you can see that it's diffusion. I'm not using anything deep here, okay? It's just terminology. So terminology from Landau-Lifschitz will say you that in particle flow, if you have term proportional to gradient of chemical potential, special gradient of chemical potential, then it is diffusion. And then you see this kappa appears here, okay, the same kappa. So what we have called it kind of diffusivity, or when you will see it further, it's kind of transport coefficient. Also, it is clear that it's not a perfect fluid, because you see here, particle or charge flow is not parallel to energy flow, it's not parallel to this gradient. So it's a very strange system in that sense. Yeah.
So usually when you have diffusion or any other transport phenomenon, you think the system is not unitary. You don't have unitary evolution.
Exactly.
But then you're driving a revolution from an action. So how are the two consistent?
Very good point. I really don't know. Because you see, so far we have not done any approximations whatsoever. We just have written how the equation looks like and used terminology. Obviously, there is no entropy production whatsoever. And I will also show you that it's exactly a diffusion equation, just a couple of slides later. And I would be really happy to understand this, you know?
I have a related question.
Yeah.
normally says diffuse in the naive sense of diffusion, it violates causality. You get
absolutely right.
So
yeah.
Does this have that?
No.
How does this avoid that?
Let me show you just in a second. That will be explained in two transparencies, I think. I will come back to this. So then you see you can also define pressure in absolutely. So what I'm doing, I'm not doing any approximations. I'm just thinking the system and just rewriting it. And then you can also see what is the energy momentum tensor, which you derived in standard way. So it has this part, which looks like perfect fluid. However, here in epsilon and in this curly P, you have in curly P the time derivative of chemical potential. But time with respect to your preferred reference frame. Yeah? So it's all generally covariant, of course. And here you have this theta. Plus, you have energy flow here. And you see why this kappa was called transport coefficient, because energy is transported along the special gradients of chemical potential. So also, it's just straightforward derivation, no approximations whatsoever. Also, very important point that there is, of course, no heat flux. There is no entropy production, there is no heat flux. Why? Because, in fact, heat flux is defined as the difference between properly defined this Q, which is staying in this energy momentum tensor, and the energy transported by the special part of the particle flow. And in fact, here they just coincide, it's just the same. Therefore, there is no heat flux. However, most books, if you look, you know, they would say that this part, just per definition, is heat flux, but it's not because we are not in Eckert frame, for example. Yeah. So then, also the funny thing, okay, you can try to match it to more or less standard things, and then what is really surprising, you see in this P you have m dot. M dot was phi 2 dot, okay? So second derivative for phi. Obviously, in order to write it, well, you need to solve equation of motion. Now you can solve it and then expand it for the small transport coefficients and plug it in back. What you will figure out is that here you also get theta. So finally you get kind of a term which mechanically would correspond to bulk viscosity. However, you see the funny thing, here you have theta and in epsilon you have theta as well. And then you are working with the approximation when the gradients are small, kind of you do gradient, standard gradient expansion, or if you want very small kappa. The interesting thing is that then this can be transformed to the perfect fluid up to order kappa squared. Okay, now exactly what you were asking. So this system has this second order equation. Of course, it's absolutely different from diffusion from by classification because it has second derivatives. So if I remember, there was this phi 2 dot. Okay, there was no phi dot. And that's it. So by classification, our diffusion equation is just parabolic equation, whereas this equation is not in the classification because it's not quasi-linear equation. It's highly nonlinear. However, what turns out, recall physics, okay? If we have diffusion, or if you want, it's simpler to understand by heat conductance, but heat transfer. There is implicit assumption that the material where the temperature is propagating is not changing the volume. Because if this was the case, the equation would be different because I would spend part of my energy in this energy balance to change the volume of the material. So in fact, diffusion and these heat transfer equations, they are written for incompressible medium. And I think, by the way, this is partially the reason why there, the speed of propagation is infinite, in fact, because they're parabolic. Because you put it absolutely rigidly there. Now, let's do the same trick here. So, we don't care whether it's self-consistent or not, okay? Let's just kill this expansion by hand. Like, really raping the system, okay? And in that case, my equation of motion turns out to be this. And as you see, this is a perfect diffusion equation for exactly diffusion of these Swift charges. It's also a general covariant equation because these gradients are purely special gradients written in this way. This dot is just along the flow. And then there is this term which is just, you know, the manifestation of the fact that it's not written in a normal inertial frame because you have acceleration. But of course, it's very tricky. And you know, of course, you
this gradient bar is the spatial derivative.
Yeah. It's orthogonal to you. You see, it's here. It's defined. So in a sense, but you see, the contrary to normal parabolic equations, which are linear, this equation is still not linear, highly nonlinear. And it's in fact just equivalent to what we had before. And there, that I will not show you, but if you expand it in around arbitrary background, you can look when perturbations at least are described by hyperbolic equations.
The linearized order is hyperbolic.
Yes, it can be hyperbolic, it depends on the background.
No, yeah. It's not hyperbolic in this background.
No, but you see, that's the funny thing, because you will need, don't forget that this is nonlinear, because in this N you have also derivatives. So you see, it looks like, so it's really the same form. But if you start rewriting it like properly, then you recover the same equation which you had before.
So do you know in the full nonlinear set of equations, do you know whether they have characteristics? Surfaces within the light cone or outside? In other words, do you know whether they're causal in some well defined?
Yes, we do know. In some cases they are, in some cases they are not. It depends highly on your background. It depends. You see, the point is, characteristics usually are defined for linear equations. It's just what you have, I mean, they're background independent. For example, like light cone doesn't care about the background. But for quasi-linear already, it becomes a statement when...
I mean, for example, the Einstein equations are very not, they're quasi-linear.
Yes.
But they have a well-defined causality property, which is...
But these equations are much more nonlinear than Einstein.
They're much more nonlinear.
Yes.
So is it, are you saying it's not possible to formulate causality for them?
No, it is possible. It is perfectly possible.
And in general, they're acausal, but in certain regions of the solution space, they behave causally? Is that...
Well, for first of all, of course, it depends what you define under causality, because if your equation is hyperbolic for perturbations, then it is causal, per definition, if you provide an initial hypersurface, which is Cauchy hypersurface.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's true. I mean, the thing would be, I don't know exactly how you would formulate it in this case, but you'd want to set up an initial value formulation
as
a theory. And then you'd want to vary the initial data in some region of a Cauchy surface.
Yes.
And you'd want to know that the solution doesn't change outside the future domain of dependence.
Oh, that's very, very, that's for that. That's I can show you very nice thing. Just a second.
That's
Let me explain you a very simple thing. Sorry for making you hot.
Yeah.
For that, there is a very nice geometrical explanation, by the way. So as we are dealing with a second order system, so your initial data are phi of x and phi dot of x. So this is my hypersurface. So original, if you want, my Cauchy hypersurface. Okay. Now I plug in this initial data, so there are two profiles. And suppose...
So you're treating the metric as given? Or
yeah, suppose there is no gravity for simplicity. Okay. So this will be phi dot. It's this guy. And this guy is phi, okay? Now I created an infinite support, finite size, okay? And I create them smooth, so that they go here to zero and here to zero in a smooth way. C1, for example. But you see, in that case, what is really funny, so if you write this k of x and phi, obviously phi here doesn't play any role, yeah? And then g of x and phi, and then box phi, then when you go to the smooth part and you calculate this metric, which you can calculate for perturbations, then the cone, the characteristics of perturbations here, they will become light cones. Just by continuity. Of course, here I assumed that to be zero is a solution of the system as well, and there is a smooth limit. So that means that in this global sense, they are causal. So for example, if the whole universe is empty, I create a small lump of this matter here, then it will propagate with the speed of light to somebody. However, if I first send spacecrafts, create background up to Alpha Centauri, then I can send signals faster than light there inside, using small fluctuations of the thing. But in a sense, it's still causal, obviously.
So you're saying just because of the linear equation being causal, you can deduce that it's causal in a nonlinear sense?
Yeah, because I know how they're propagating here, if it is smooth. If it's not smooth, then...
Well, how do you know some signal couldn't come from the middle and sort of...
Yeah,
race,
no problem, no problem.
Faster than the...
Here, you see, here the local speed will be whatever, larger, right? But then, I care only how the whole thing will propagate outside of my waveform. Because if it is inside, then...
Okay, I'll have to talk.
Yeah, we can discuss
it
in detail later. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Should we...
There are people who control this.
Some crime.
And they're going to know my mind.
Control. It's warm here. Okay,
yes. Smoking the Oz.
Okay. So, okay, let me accelerate. So, then the funny thing is, if you do not assume the state equal to zero, if you do not want to overimpose the system just to see what is this, in that case, you can see that this horrible nonlinear equation of motion is just equivalent to old and well forgotten first law of thermodynamics. So you take energy inside of the co-moving volume, you take this co-moving volume, and then you see that this dE is equal minus pdV plus mdN, where n is number of the shift charges inside of the stuff. Then you have this Euler relation, which is also old, you know, old known things. Which is quite funny that you derive, that you can understand this highly nonlinear crazy system using just normal well-known physics, you know. Then let's go finally to cosmology. I think I'm really over time. So to go to cosmology from this hydrodynamics is very easy. You put this Q equal to zero because it's purely special vector. It was special gradient of chemical potential. Then theta is just 3H. You recover Friedmann equation, and this Friedmann equation is just normal. You don't modify gravity, yeah? But because our epsilon had expansion inside, now it has a term which is linear in H. And if you look, it's similar to DGP, okay? Where this K kappa M is a crossover scale in DGP. Moreover, you can recover really DGP when this kappa M is constant, but in that case, you always have either ghost or sound speed imaginary. Okay, then you can work out what is the equation of motion for this stuff. And if you write it just without knowing proper notation, it will take you 2 pages. So if you know what is this, it's just this current conservation, or charge conservation. Okay? This is the source. Yeah.
You said you have ghost in DGP, but here you don't have ghost?
No. It's inverse. So you have this equation. So now, exact DGP would be when kappa m is constant. Because this RC in DGP is constant. But if you try to do that, that fixes your G. And if you fix your G, then you will see then on this background, it will become. And also, of course, you need to kill this term. That's also important. That will be like your cascoton. If you want, it's kind of your cascoton plus a term G, which produces constant scale here. If you do that, you always have either ghost or gradient instability there.
But I don't have it.
No. You don't. But you see, the point is, you don't have this term. That's important thing. You don't have it, of course. For you, it's non-dynamical system, of course. Yeah. So now, having this equation, now let's switch to, to shift symmetry. So now this term will be there. And immediately you know the first integral, because all charges are just redshifted as a minus 3. So now let's write action for cosmological perturbations of this stuff. And actually, there are not many second quadratic actions for anything. So therefore, the only two things which you can do, you can write sound speed here, and you can write the amplitude here. So this amplitude looks very similar to, for example, k essence. Yeah? The only difference is kappa. So if you put kappa equal to 0, then it's like k essence. And you see this guy is positive. So x is just normal kinetic term. So it's phi dot squared. So this guy is always positive. Whereas this d, that's what controls whether you do have ghosts or not. And you see this condition is now very different from normal perfect fluids, because it has this term, which is linear in kappa, which is not there for perfect fluids or K-essence. And it has also quadratic term, which is, by the way, mostly overlooked in the literature because that appears from the point that your equations are kinetically coupled. And you need first to kind of diagonalize them. Also, the sound speed is very different from a perfect fluid. Okay?
Yeah.
I mean that the whole action would be negatively defined if you want. So here it would be minus in this signature. Okay, so now the sound speed, well, all naive people who are doing dark energy, they would say that it's P dot over epsilon dot or dp over d epsilon. No, it's not a perfect fluid. It's like some horrible mess, which as you can see has also H inside and so on. And you see this difference of this CS and D, that's what allows you to violate Nollinger condition without being linearly unstable.
So another question. Yeah. You didn't have higher spatial derivatives in your action?
No, not at all. Because you see, the system is really second order and Lorentz symmetric from the very beginning. Therefore, if you have second derivative in phi, then there is second derivative in space as well. By the way, it's quite a tricky question because if you look at this Hajava stuff, then it's tricky because their equations become very, very strange. But you see, this guy is always second order in all frames. Doesn't matter what kind of frame you use. Whereas Hajava has only second derivatives in time and not high derivatives in time, only in one frame. So if you go in another frame, then you're done. You have high derivatives in time there. So you have more degrees of freedom, effectively. So then I have 10 minutes. Tell you what is our idea, how to use this crazy hydrodynamical system to find whether we have a balance or not. Well, let's take the simplest theory. Okay, let's take shift symmetric Lagrangian. That's really kind of hydrodynamics. And then phi disappears from here. Then also let's take external matter because, well, in the real universe, there will be always some external matter. And this external matter, let's take the simplest one, namely like dust, radiation. Well, we can also model extrinsic curvature, special curvature, okay, by putting the W minus 1/3. In any case, most interesting cosmological stuff will have W equal to constant, where W is this equation of state. Then you see, you take the system, which was shift symmetric, therefore everything should depend only on phi dot. I mean, background evolution, and also on this raw external. Of course, if you are dealing with just special curvature, then this becomes one-dimensional because this raw external is fixed. It's just one. So then go to new coordinates by solving Friedmann equation. So raw external you can always solve through Friedmann equation, obviously, expressing it through M and H. Why to do that? Because if you look at the picture of this phase space, M and rho external, it's two-dimensional, but it's a surface which is highly non-trivial, which is not projectable in these coordinates M and rho external. So then M is phi dot, is this chemical potential, if you want, in the hydrodynamical language. Then you see, well, in this guy, we know how the energy would be redshifted at minus 3, 1 plus W. And N is redshifted like minus 3. Therefore, immediately you have an integral of motion or first integral. So the system is, in fact, integrable because it's N power 1 plus W divided by rho external. So this thing along any trajectory is constant. I don't show you these equations because they look quite unpleasant. But you see, having a first integral, you can study even the equations. What happens in far asymptotics if you cross somewhere h equals 0, if you bounce, what will be before, what will be after that, in analytic fashion, without using numerics. Now, do the following things. You have this phase space, M and H. Now, you know, if something bounces, then H is 0. So if H is 0, then, well, pose the conditions. That first of all, this external energy density, you see, hydrodynamics kind of doesn't know whether it's positive or negative. But of course, real hydrodynamics has only positive rho external. So post condition, rho external is non-negative. Then no ghosts, positive sound speed squared, real sound speed, and a bounce. So H dot larger than 0. So now we have these four conditions. The question, can you satisfy them at least for some delta m? So you have two-dimensional space. H is equal zero, some range of delta m where it can be satisfied or not. And yeah, you have two functions which are free, k and g. You can play with them. So if you can, then you have healthy bounds. So is it possible? The answer, of course, yes. We can. And for example, simplest option, analytical option to do that would be to introduce the following hierarchy. Okay. Of course, you will not see it from these equations because they look like mass. But the point is this simple set of inequalities, which looks like, you see, it's kind of Taylor expansion. So k, if you want, that was your normal equilibrium pressure, is larger than m dk over dm. That should be larger than 1/2 m squared d2k over dm squared. But also, this guy should be negative, and it should be exactly in the middle of this, between these two values. So actually, how to find the bounds? Very simple. I take this function, which satisfies this function k, which satisfies 1, 2, 3, okay? And then I can always find the function kappa. That would be true. So that means that, if you want, that's mathematical proof, that's analytical proof, that it's always possible to satisfy all these inequalities. Also, funny thing is that, as you see, this does not depend on w, provided w is larger than minus 1, the normal. I mean, of course, if you have some hydrodynamics which is already violating Nolan-Jacques condition, then it's pointless to talk about this. So now let me show you how the systems would look like. So let's take a Lagrangian, which looks from effective field theory perspective a bit crazy. So take normal kinetic term minus kinetic term cube. For a while, forget about x squared. Why? Because, well, because this is just my equation of state, and I want to have it like that. And then you add this coupling or braiding, if you want, with box phi, and you take radiation. Then you look at this phi space, okay, two-dimensional phi dot h. So it has holes because original two-dimensional surface was complicated, and when you project it, there are some places which are not there physically, and they correspond to negative energy density, okay? They're physically not there. The boundary of these regions is just a solution, because obviously when rho is zero, it's always zero, and that doesn't disturb my scalar field to evolve. Therefore, I never cross the boundary. Then you see, that's my evolution. So blue region is a healthy region where everything is stable. So there is real sound speed, there are no ghosts. Then you see here, this poor scalar field would become ghosty. I mean, the perturbations would become ghosty here and here. Whereas here in these two small corners, the sound speed would become imaginary. And as you see now, it's easy. This is h equals zero. It's easy to bounce. So I evolve from here, cross h equals zero, and go to here, and in fact, that I will not show you, but in fact, this, of course, is reached in infinite amount of time, and this is radiation-dominated universe there. So it's nothing very weird.
So you're crossing imaginary sound speed.
No, you're not crossing, you are starting from the region where the sound speed is imaginary. That's the point. So you see, that's one of the main tacits. So yes, you can avoid initial singularity in gravity. So you can start from the regime where gravity is perturbative. It's quantum perturbative gravity, nothing special. But the price for that to pay, instead of the singularity in the normal metric, you have, because the sound speed here is zero on this line, you have a singularity in the acoustic metric. So now, instead of dealing with a strongly coupled gravity, you deal with a strongly coupled scalar field. I don't know whether it's better or not. Of course, you can also speculate that then this whole description is relevant. Obviously, quantum corrections will be extremely important around this region because the fluctuations are normalized so that they go like 1 divided by the square root of sound speed.
The same thing happens on the other side, right?
Yes, yes. Here it's also funny because you see here you can start from a normal state. So here it's all fine. No singularities at the beginning. It's kind of instability. You know, you follow here, you collapse, 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 then you expand. But then we will arrive again to the region sound speed equal zero. And of course, here you cannot actually further write your classical evolution because of huge quantum fluctuations. You really don't know what happens. Of course, you could avoid evolving here because you could say, okay, my system decays, I could introduce new degrees of freedom. Maybe you could avoid it, but I don't know. That's much more deliberate.
So, what is your blue line and red line?
So, these are just two trajectories. You see, the red line, if you start from here, would correspond to kind of normal good trajectory, okay, which is non-singular. Also, don't look that here it's not much space, yeah? It's not a Liouville measure, therefore, it's infinite amount of trajectories. The point is it's not measure zero. That's what is important for us. So the blue line, however, you see, I start from here, and I hit this line. And you see, this line is very interesting because the flow goes towards this line from this side and towards, again, the same line from this side. In fact, what is this? When you recall this hydrodynamical description, on this line, d is equal to zero. Now, my pressure was m containing m dot. So m dot is, in fact, phi 2 dot. That means that I had to solve it in such a way that I solve equation of motion. And of course, the coefficient in front phi 2 dot is exactly the same d. So you see, that means that if d is zero, then my pressure, total pressure, blows up. So in fact, this is another cosmological singularity.
So
yeah.
In some of this, you didn't put in any anisotropy.
No, anisotropy, yeah. No anisotropy.
So are you saying that most of the trajectories here then are sick? I think I'm missing something. It seems like even your red curve starts from a bad place. So there's no trajectory that is always in the good physical region.
Absolutely right. You see, that's exactly what I said. The price to pay, you avoid the initial Big Bang singularity, which would be here. But the price for that to pay, you enter a strong coupling regime during your collapse phase, so to say. So you start from collapse, and you cannot continue your trajectory infinitely into your past. You still hit a trouble, not with quantum gravity, though, but with this scalar field, which becomes strongly coupled or crazy. However, the important point is here that it's not a serial. We were not able to show that it's always the case. You see, we were only concentrated to go through this red line. That was our main purpose.
But
now you see, it can be used. Yeah.
Still a bigger problem. Your Hubble is not decreasing with time, it seems, after the bounce.
Where?
Right? Because
here?
Where is the bounce happening?
Well, this is h equals zero. This is your line.
Okay, so that's the bounce. Okay, I was thinking that the middle thing is the bounce. I see.
No. It's the whole of this line.
Okay.
This works as the line which you have to cross.
Okay.
So any trajectory which crosses this h equals zero line, going from here to here.
Okay, at infinite future, you go to the origin. That's
yes,
right.
And this is just normal radiation dominated universe.
Is there the turn around point? If you turn around, you also have h equal to zero.
You mean here?
No, I mean, if you start from expanding to collapsing, there is also a moment h equal to zero.
You mean when they start from expanding to collapsing, you mean here or where? Because my expansion is only on the right-hand side from this red line. And I can start from healthy trajectories to go to, I can start here, then I arrive just to normal, very big universe. Or I can start from here. Then I go to CS equals zero.
Yeah. So is there a middle point, a bouncing point? The middle point?
No. Bouncing point is here. It's not a point, otherwise it would be pointless. Otherwise, it would be measure zero. See, that's the point. You need to cross a boundary.
Yes.
And the boundary is this huge red line.
Right.
And you need to cross it from left to right in the blue region.
I see.
Yeah.
I see. So your trajectory and stop at that point.
Well, that's your fixed point. That your final destination is just boring, ever expanding radiation dominated universe.
So there's no turnaround. The trajectory does not enter.
pass through that point.
No, it doesn't pass through this point. Yeah, it's a fixed point.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let me show you. It can be really crazy. You know, some other systems can be crazy. Let's take a different Lagrangian, or whatever. Forget what is the functions. Not important. And also radiation, as you can see, believe it's somehow blurry. I don't know why. But this is the interesting thing. Yes, you can still bounce. But the interesting thing, you bounce and you recollapse. Okay? On the other hand, you can expand, then bounce, and then expand again. So it's kind of first steps towards the cyclic universe, if you want. However, there are no real cycles, it's just recollapse and so on. Now, okay, can one generalize it?
What's the difference between the second and the first? Just a different choice of coupling
constant? No, it's a different transport coefficient and different equation of state.
That's what I meant.
It's a different Lagrangian. Yes,
different.
It's a different Lagrangian. And there are like tons of these pictures. They can be as crazy as you want. But the point is, it's very simple to figure out when they do this bounce. Okay, and then can one generalize this approach to systems without shift symmetry? Well, let's try the first example, which was by Alberto Nicolis, Paolo Criminelli, and Trincherini. They were studying this Lagrangian, okay, which is quite unfortunate. It's also a bit unpleasant. However, you know, it doesn't have shift symmetry. But it has this phi, and now you can do the same trick. You can solve for phi from Friedmann equation. You still have two-dimensional phase plot. You can use the same coordinates, h and phi dot. Here, it's again the region which is not physical. There, this exponent would be negative. Okay, who cares? It's not there. Then you look at trajectories. So, in the paper, they started on the red trajectory, which kind of starts from here and doesn't bounce, but it's kind of Minkowski. So you see, your h is always either zero or positive. This is the red one. Then you evolve, but as you see, you always go, so that we have a mathematical proof for that. You always cross this line where the sound speed is negative. Oh, imagine. On the other hand, you can bounce. You start just a bit left from there, you bounce, but it's the same fate. So you see, the phase portraits of the systems are in fact quite similar. So you start from, even without being a singular, you start from normal thing, but you constantly evolve to some term. The only way to evolve it, well, decays this field, I don't know, kill it somehow. That's a different story. Of course, this cannot be considered, contrary to these guys were claiming, it cannot be considered alternative to inflation, because similarly to many models, pre-Big Bang models and so on, you, in fact, instead of explaining beginning of time, you run into end of time. However, here, it's end of time, which is because you gain a strongly coupled regime of the scalar field phi. However, of course, if you even believe you continue there, then you will see that it hits singularity in finite time, h equal to infinity. Also here you will see that, you know, that's how curvature grows. So here curvature is slow, and here it's larger. Okay, so open questions are, what is the strong coupling there for fluctuations that we're still working on? So possible anisotropy, exactly what you said, because you know, it may happen that, well, there's no infinitely strong instability. There are no ghost instabilities, there are no sound speed or gradient instability. But there can be quite strong tachyonic instabilities on time scales which are relevant for this bounce. But that's much harder to analyze, for that it's better to have some, you know, particular good system. I bet you it's possible to avoid for most of them. So can one arrange it, cyclic oscillating evolution? That's an interesting question, we don't know. Can one avoid all singularities and troubles for the past? Actually, I don't see a reason why not. Maybe possible, maybe not. If not, we need to use this first integral and study global dynamics. Then perturbations there, well, maybe one could generate something reasonable and then decay this field and so on. And this is related to any realistic scenarios of how to connect this to normal standard cosmology. Okay, thanks a lot for your attention. Sorry for being over time.